This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Today we're talking about Consumer Protection Act, which is what everyone wants to know all the time. It affects us daily. In studio with me is Emil Myberg. He's a specialist in the Consumer Protection Act and many other laws. Welcome again to you, Emil.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Emil, let me just give out our contact details, if I may. The Facebook page is The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg, and our Twitter handle is at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. This is the time of year, Emil, where I think it's where we all sitting down to book our year-end holidays. And what happens if you need to cancel is always a thought that goes through our heads. I'm going to book an air ticket, but I'm not sure of the dates, and will this one be around then and then? How does it work?
Yes, you book a ticket, and the earlier before your intended departure date that you book it, the tickets are often cheaper. But those cheap tickets come with a whole host of restrictions. You can't change the dates, and you can't cancel. And if you do, there are immense cancellation penalties, or often you forfeit the whole airfare. But it depends on why you want to cancel. If you cancel because you've changed your mind, you no longer want to go to Mauritius, you now want to go to Namibia, you will in all likelihood, in terms of the conditions of carriage that the airlines have, you will in all likelihood not be able to cancel it unless you pay a hefty cancellation fee. And whether those cancellation fees are legal, we'll get to in a minute. But if you cancel because of your own death, which obviously goes without saying, or serious illness, then the airfare, the airline or hotel or cruise booking that you have must refund you everything. Section 17 of the Consumer Protection Act is quite clear about that. You know, in the event of illness or death, they've got to refund everything.
Sorry, is it death only of is it death within the family? How far does the death extend or the illness extend?
Well, let's have a look at what Section 17.5 says. A supplier may not impose any cancellation fee in respect of a booking, reservation, or because of the death or hospitalization of the person for whom or for whose benefit the booking, reservation, or order was made. So it's really the passenger.
Yeah. Assuming that your wife is ill, not your wife, say your, God forbid, your mother, who's not coming on the trip, she's very ill, you can't get your money. It's got to be you yourself.
Yes, it's got to be the passenger.
Yeah.
But having said that, I feel that all airlines operating in South Africa, and there I include foreign airlines, if you buy a ticket on a European airline departing in South Africa and returning to South Africa, that European airline or any foreign airline is subject to the Consumer Protection Act, mm-hmm. just as much as anybody else. Mm-hmm. So whether it's Cape Town to Johannesburg or Cape Town to London,
yes.
the CPA applies. And what the, this same Section 17 says is that if you cancel with sufficient notice, then you are entitled to a refund. The supplier can charge a cancellation penalty, but once again, the cancellation penalty must be reasonable, and it mustn't be a penalty that basically takes away any advantage that you have in terms of the Consumer Protection Act. So saying your cancellation fee is 100% and you agree that this is reasonable, that's not valid.
I've booked a ticket for December peak, 15th of December, 16th, whatever. I can't make it anymore. I want to cancel. I know the airline can replace 1,000 people.
Yes.
With that seat.
Now, here we are faced with the reality of enforcing the Consumer Protection Act. You know, the CPA is a beautiful piece of law. Some problems, yes, but and it's empowered the consumer. But you go take on South African Airways or British Airways or any of the other big airlines. The first thing that they are going to wave at you is, here are our conditions of carriage. You say that you agree that if you cancel for whatever reason, you will forfeit everything.
Yes, but so you can get someone, you can get 100 people to sit in that seat.
That makes no difference to them.
You know what? I want to take them on. I want to sue them. I've had enough. Someone asked here. I'll tell you who it is. It was Gabriella. She says, does a small claims court have jurisdiction to hear matters pertaining to the Consumer Protection Act?
They do have. But the risk that you run at the small claims court, with all due respect to the court, is that the commissioners are not always clued up on the Consumer Protection Act. And because the plaintiffs are not allowed legal representation, there's very little scope to present legal arguments to the commissioner.
Emil, I know that the small claims court, the commissioners, they are lawyers like you and me.
Yes.
That's who sits there. I've sat there. I don't know if you've ever sat there.
No, I haven't.
I mean, I know enough to be dangerous. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I would research it first if I had a matter that I wasn't sure of. There are a lot of competent and caring attorneys that sit as commissioners. Why would we be I wouldn't be scared to send someone there. They get instant justice.
The thing is, you even judges get it wrong. And if you lose a high court, a magistrate court case, you have the right to appeal. You do not have that in the small claims court, unless you can prove bias on the part.
Yes, but if the commissioner gets it wrong in law,
it's tough.
The answer is, of course, the small claims court can hear any case, or not any. There are some exceptions, divorces and things like that, up to 15,000 rand. Right. That's the max at the moment.
And there, I repeat what I've said here before, you know, just because your claim may exceed 15,000, you know, I would assume the small claims court even for up to 25,000 rand, because you can waive the portion of your claim over 15,000.
Waive means abandon.
Abandon, yes. Yeah. So if you go to the Mag court for 25,000 rand, you know, your legal fees are going to be 10,000 rand, unfortunately, as well. So I would that's what I would do if I have a claim of even up to 25,000.
You are the procureur that took someone on recently. We've discussed it before, but that's in another podcast. Just tell us quickly about the photographs of your daughter, I think it is, and where you went and what your result is.
Yes. Well, in a nutshell, you know, a photographer took some pictures of my daughter at her school, and, you know, beautiful pictures. And then before I could buy the pictures that I really wanted, I had to buy a bundle of products that really didn't interest me. I phoned the photographer and said, listen, I'm prepared to give you good business. I'll buy 2,000 rand pictures if I just don't have to buy these things for 300 rand. And she was very rude to me, and she said, you know, you don't have to buy anything, and slammed the phone down in my ear. You know, we're all human beings. Somebody makes you angry, and you say, okay, right, I'll show you. So I reported that to the National Consumer Commission, because you cannot bundle products. You cannot expect of a purchaser, of a client, to buy one product in order for them to get something else. And I'm afraid, you know, the cinemas are also guilty of this, not allowing you to take sweets or chocolates or cool drink that you
can. They, if you walk in with a packet of popcorn from home or from the supermarket,
well, they do stop you.
Do they stop you?
It has happened to me. Mm. And the thing is, the principle is the same, you know. So I reported this photographer to the National Consumer Commission. Mm. And there I was confronted by exactly the same problems that everybody else who take matters to the Consumer Commission are faced with. And that is they are overworked, they're underpaid, you know, because suddenly everybody can take everything they feel aggrieved about for adjudication, and it's free. My matter took more than a year to resolve because, you know, it was resolved, I think, in August. The Consumer Commission phoned me and apologized profusely because they said the photographer's answer to my complaint ended up in their spam folder. Mm. You know, so, you know, that doesn't bode well. But the thing is, they found in my favor, and the photographer offered for me to, you know, I can buy the pictures that I wanted. She wasn't very friendly in her emails, but, you know, at least I got the pictures.
How long was this whole process from beginning to end?
Roughly a year.
So you've got to wait a year for in your case.
Yes.
Let's talk about the accommodation that we're booking now. You book a hotel, you arrive there, It looks great on the net, and it's shocking when you get there. You want out.
Yeah, deceptive advertising.
Yeah.
That is also not allowed in the Consumer Protection Act. You know, if you say this is not the product I ordered.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, you know, if you want to get your money back, if you have paid a deposit, they can force you to go through the whole fight.
It's going to be a question of fact. They're going to say, well, you've got to analyze the picture on the internet. That's the very picture that you see here. They may have made it glossy and pretty, and the rooms look much better on the net than they are.
But they always do, don't they?
Yeah, they always do. Even 10-star hotels.
Yes.
It's going to be a hard one to prove.
It will be. I think it will have to be absolutely uninhabitable.
What happened? Yeah, absolutely. So it's got to be completely on the other side.
Yes.
Ridiculous.
Yes. You know, but if they advertise, you know, a big plush king size bed, and you get there and it's, you know, these camp style beds, I think you would.
You'd have the right to say, I want my money.
Yes.
And I'm getting out of here.
Yes.
What happens if you book for 2 weeks and after a week you've just had enough? You just don't want to. It's a nice hotel. You just.
You know, you mentioned that is one of the conditions of Airbnb, which I don't think gels with the Consumer Protection Act. You know, if you want to cancel, you are entitled to cancel subject to a reasonable cancellation fee and subject to the supplier being able to find somebody else. There, you know, if you say, okay, look, it's the middle of a 2-week holiday, I want to leave now. It might be difficult for the supplier to find somebody else. And I think what's important to remember in terms of the Consumer Protection Act is suppliers also have some rights. You know, their rights to impose unilaterally unfair terms have been severely curtailed. Mm. But that doesn't mean that the supplier is now king and can do whatever he wants without paying penalties.
I think the answer is try not to pay for the whole vacation up front.
That's right.
You pay for a week or so, and then the supplier would have to sue you rather than you sue him.
That's right.
The supplier could sue you.
That's right.
They say, well, listen, you buggered off after a week. I couldn't let that room to anyone else. I'm going to hold you liable.
Precisely.
Then he's got to sue you.
Precisely.
But that's his problem.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to be trying to get money back. So what's the answer? Try not to pay up front for the entire accommodation?
Yes. Although some instances, some... suppliers require full prepayment, and in some cases you say if you cancel, say up to the day before or the day of your first night, then we're entitled to take 100% from your credit card. You know, and they ask for credit card details.
Yeah, this is a problem. Absolutely, they've got your credit card.
Yeah, I've got. I'm going to Cape Town on Friday. I hope that the airlines are flying again by Friday, because I've got a hotel booking which says that if you don't clock in by 6 o'clock, then we take the full booking. And there I won't be able to really to hide behind the fact that my airline was on strike, or their pilots, because that's got nothing to do with them, really. So it's difficult, you know.
Give us the answers. Aren't there any?
Well, what I would do, you know, prevention is always better than cure. You know, if I see that I won't be able to make it to Cape Town, then I will cancel the booking. Because obviously I would know way before the last minute that I can still cancel, that I won't be able to be there. So then I would cancel. Then I would go after the airline. So, okay, now you must give me back all my money because it's your fault that I couldn't go.
No. The law and advice that we give and the practical situation are poles apart.
Yes.
The truth is, once you go into a hotel and you give them your credit card, they got you.
That's right.
And there's literally, you can give them law from today till tomorrow.
Yes.
They got you, and they're gonna take your money.
Yeah, that's why, you know, there's this adage in law that possession is 9/10 of the law.
Absolutely.
So with its possession, if your credit card or your car, it's... It's
yeah,
the
once
safe.
They got your credit card. I mean, you could apply to stop the payment on the credit card.
Yes, but I think you won't get away with that because the credit card company will check how it was paid. You know, if
there's no fraud or anything.
Yeah, if your credit card was swiped,
yes,
and you signed for it as well and entered your PIN,
yes,
you're going to have a tough time to prove to them that it was fraud.
Yeah, you could apply to court. That's your, and that would be to the High Court.
Yes.
And that's very expensive.
Yes.
But depends how much your hotel accommodation would be for the rest of the stay.
Yes.
But you can get a court order interdicting the bank paying out on the credit card.
You can, but this reminds me of a case I had many years ago where my opponent was telling me about a case that he had where they wanted to stop a bank payment, an international payment. And the bank said, we will ignore that. I said, the international payment system is so important that we will ignore a court order. We would pay it and then we will face the consequences. So, you know, you might be on shaky ground there.
Our Ray Green also gave some legal advice. He often does. And 99% of the time he gets it right.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Ray, it's actually he that gave me this cue about Section 17 of the CPA.
Tell us what he said about it.
Well, Section 17 of the CPA, which deals with cancellations, refunds, and penalties, gives consumers the right to cancel an advance reservation, booking or order, and suppliers the right to impose a reasonable cancellation penalty.
And the operative word there is the reasonable. They're entitled to impose a reasonable.
Yes.
I mean, we can go on and on about landlord and tenant. When you want to cancel, what's a reasonable penalty?
We don't know.
We don't know that one.
And this is where a small claims commissioners, you know, often find against the tenants. You know, so you cancelled 1 year before the end of the period, and I feel that 6 months is a reasonable penalty. Until we get guidance on that from the High Court, and unfortunately most tenants are not in the position to go litigate in the High Court, we will have to go with the opinions of attorneys and writers like you and I. I believe that a reasonable penalty is really very little. You know, you're entitled, first of all, to your 1 month notice. And then what else? You know, they put in lease agreements that we both agree that 3 months or 4 months will be a reasonable cancellation penalty, provided that we can find somebody else. And if not, then you're liable for the whole remainder of the lease. Mm. That is not reasonable.
No.
But the problem is, how are you going to get that back? Mm. Because if we're talking about a year cancellation, you know, then suddenly 20,000 rand a month, there you will have to go sue in at least the magistrate's court.
Yeah.
And you're at an immense disadvantage. For that case to be finalized, it's going to take a year. The magistrate might get it wrong. Then you have to appeal. So we're still
That's a tough one. Emil, what comes up all the time on Legal Talk and all over the place, and I've been asked this, people make alterations to the property like a bookcase that gets nailed in. It's a permanent fixture.
Yes. The other one is the DSTV antenna.
Yeah. Whose property is this?
It becomes the property of the landlord. I know some people are not don't agree with that, but there is appeal court authority of that. It's a Rand Airport case, where if the tenant affixes a permanent fixture, that becomes, first of all, the property of the landlord, unless they've got an agreement to the contrary. Mm-hmm. The best that the tenant has is he's got an enrichment claim against the landlord for whatever value the property would have been increased by that fixture. And enrichment is obviously a very tricky...
No, that's really... that's another aspect.
Yes.
So you're saying the DSTV aerial that I put up belongs to the landlord if I'm renting the property?
It does.
And I can't pull it down when I leave?
No.
Even if I'm there for 6 months? Or
even if you're there for 6 months.
Or 6 minutes.
But, like everything in law, you know, the answers can be quite complex. In that Rand Airport appeal case, the landlord wanted to cancel the lease. Yeah. And the tenant had effected some improvements, fixtures. And he said, look, as long as you don't reimburse me for these fixtures, then you cannot cancel the lease agreement. Mm. So there... the tenant won. But the principle was confirmed. The fixtures, permanent fixtures...
Belong
to the landlord.
It's always been the law, that.
Yes.
Just be careful. Put a bookcase up, but don't nail it into the wall.
Precisely.
Another one that always comes up is, when you rent a property, you put down a deposit. Say your rent is 4,500 a month. They ask you for a month's deposit, whatever. So it's 4,500. The rent escalates the following year.
Yes.
Then the landlord comes and says, hey, increase your deposit. Yes. Can he?
He can't unless that has been specifically, expressly agreed to in the contract.
It never really is.
What I've seen, and the estate agents, you know, they are really very imaginative people because they come and say, look, the contract says the deposit is equal to 1 month's rent. The rent has now gone up. Now, my reply to that is, unless the agreement says that when the rent goes up, you must also pay the an addition to the deposit, then you are not liable to pay extra for or anything extra when the rent goes up. Their arguments here, but it's implied by the fact that we say that the rent is the deposit is equal to 1 month's rent. I would use the that rule that says that the contract is interpreted against the party
absolutely
that is responsible for drafting it.
Emil, we're kind of running out of time. Quickly, there's a few here. I buy something from a store, I can get it cheaper elsewhere. I just saw after I paid for it that I can get it 1,000 rand cheaper. Can I take the item back and say, hey, give me my money back?
No, that's tough. You know, so you've got a contract with the place you bought it and for the price.
There's nothing under the CPA that gives
nothing under the CPA, no.
What about, I purchased an item, someone asked this question, there's the shop price tag is on the item, it's defective, I want to replace it, but I've lost the slip.
Yeah, there you would really be at the mercy of the supplier. You know, if you can't really show proof that you bought it from them, and especially
well, it's got it shows the supplier's tag.
Yeah, but
I just don't have the date.
That's
the
still not proof that you bought it. I can't imagine that most shops would really refuse to replace.
But they're within their rights to refuse.
They would be.
Yeah. Someone says that you've got 7 days if your item is defective to replace, to return it. Where does this myth come from?
I don't know. There are often people, you know, they answer questions and my answer to them is, can you please give me authority for that? You know, where do you get the 7 days? Oh, well, I thought it was like that.
So there's no 7 days. It's rubbish. If my item is defective, how long have I got to return it?
The CPA gives 6 months.
Yes.
But often the warranties or guarantees from the stores themselves are much more generous.
Okay, if there's no warranty, I can come back within 6 months, say, hey, this item's defective, and they've got to?
Either replace it or give you your money back.
Yeah. We've run out of time. You've been involved in franchises. Just in a minute, you had a big case going now.
It's still going on.
Yeah. What's the story with franchises that you want to point out?
Well, franchise, it's important to remember that the franchisee is put in the same position as a consumer. So the Consumer Protection Act, most of the provisions that apply to an ordinary consumer also apply to a franchisee. And when you sign a franchise agreement, it's important that the franchisor must give you a disclosure document containing a lot of financial information so that you can make an informed decision. Because often franchises look like they're a massive success. But what people often miss is, you know, a franchise is not a guaranteed success. You've got to put in a lot of hard work, and you need to know what goes into it.
Please take advice. That's the best advice I can give you. Before, but specifically when you're entering into a franchise.
Yes. Paying a lawyer 10,000, 20,000 rand to have a look at a contract for you, to draft a few, is much cheaper than the hundreds of thousands you will spend on a high court case.
Absolutely. I don't know if you need to spend 10,000. You may get 2,000, 3,000 and get advice
maybe that,
on it. But do take advice. It's been fascinating, as usual, on the Consumer Protection Act. We could go, you and I could go on forever.
Indeed.
On this one. Emil Myburgh, you're an attorney in Johannesburg. Thank you very much.
Thank you very
much. We appreciate it. To you, our listener, I hope you've enjoyed this one. And until next time, cheers.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.